Welcome to another episode of the Pink Glasses Convo. I'm so excited to have you all join us for today's episode. It's such an amazing episode. I had so much fun, kind of talking to our guest for today. And, today we're going to be looking at imposter syndrome in a professional setting. But to be honest, it's imposter syndrome in every single setting that we find ourselves. And so I hope you'll have as much fun and take as much from this episode as I was able to. So anyways, you know the drill. It's going to be a long conversation, so get ready. I'll see you on the other side. Bye. Hey everyone, welcome to PGC. Welcome to another episode. I have another friend. Like I told y'all, see, I am going to be using my friend system for inviting guests because I cannot be looking for guests when I have people, right? You know, everyone talks about starting from where you're at and using the resources that you have, right? So where else to start from than all my friends? I promise gender equality, even though most of my friends that I have lined up are females, but I will get someone that isn't female, I promise. But anyways, today it's easy to be like an amazing friend and an amazing person, but I honestly mean like I have an amazing friend of mine who definitely was with me through one of the biggest transitions of my life, and still is. And we literally just had like a 1 hour 30 minutes catch up before we started recording. So if our voice goes out, it's not your people's fault, it's our fault, because we had to catch up and kind of be in synergy, you know, to be able to record. But anyway, I have Batse with me today. I've known Batse since like 2019 now. Don't worry, I'll chat in South Clap. One day I'll figure out how to in South Clap into this thing. But today, clap for yourself. Even though I sound like a primary school teacher right now. I've known Batse since 2019. So like 4 years now, even though it's interesting, but we have gone through some interesting seasons of life together, and we still are, you know, and we definitely still have more seasons in life to go with. We've done overnights trying to finish up a paper. We've stopped in the middle of like writing a paper and went to get like Zaxby's and chicken wings, and then went back to her apartment and just like watched the Nigerian movie and complained on how bad the movie was made, or watched the Nigerian movie and was like, this is so good. So anyways, I'm gonna let Batse introduce herself from a non-perspective of mine. But Batse, welcome to PGC podcast.
Thank you. I've literally been telling everyone I'm about to be famous. If you see me on the road, don't make eye contact. Look at me in the eyes, treat me and talk to me with respect. But no, everything you've been saying, honestly, I'm like, wow, some of those grad school experiences were traumatic. I've actually just blocked them out. Like that overnight.
Oh my god.
Overnight, writing a paper, coming to your house to get noodles. What a time. What a time. Like, I chose to forget that those things happened.
Yeah.
I now miss them. I'm thinking about them and I miss them.
Yeah. But, I know.
My name is Batse Smart, and I'm just happy that Ola is sharing her platform with me today to talk about something that I know we can talk about for ages.
Mm-hmm.
Also Nigerian. I like to think of myself as a transplant living in the US, because I've hopped around different states and different cities. And I've lived here for a little over 8 years now. I work at a university in South Carolina, and I do interpersonal violence response work, which is pretty much survivor advocacy.
Yep.
So working with supporting, advocating for students who have experienced, you know, sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, intimate partner violence, the whole nine yards. I love what I do. Ola and I both share that background of social work, which is where we met in school. So, you know, we kind of bond over everything from
mental health.
Yes. Mental health, talking about feelings, empowering, validating people's experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, although that looks very different for us in our different workplaces right mm-hmm. now, we definitely still share the same foundation.
Oh, yeah.
And the value system overall. So, thank you for having me.
Thank you. You know, like, I have to say, like, PGC has changed me because, like, Bate gave me, like, my flowers. She went to go and uproot, like, a truck and dumped it in front of my house of, like, just how, yes. you know, how much I am changing and I am learning, you know, to kind of bring yes. vulnerability to the friendship space. So, like, I say that to say, like, you know, like, back in the day, Bate, like, how are you? I'm like, I'm fine. God is good. Yes. Hallelujah. Praise Jehovah.
Everything okay? And I'm stuck with you today. Like, I think there were times I would make jokes about it. But for a while, like, even after we graduated, I would just be like, honestly, something can be going on in your life, and I would have no idea. And there were yeah. times I was a little slighted by it, where I'm just like, okay, am I the one whose life is falling apart? And I'll just be opening my ash outside, telling everybody, you know, but... just seeing where you are now and seeing how vulnerable you are in your podcast it has been the most beautiful thing to watch.
Oh,
and I also
you.
Understand that sometimes that comes from a place of just like caution. And when you've been mm-hmm. hurt in the past by yep. people or communities you trusted, I understand, you know, not necessarily opening up to the concept of vulnerability. And, you know, hopefully mm-hmm. over time you've met people that have just made you feel a little bit safer
too. Yeah, I think that's it. You know, but like vulnerability and being open is so hard. I think, to be honest, it's just only child syndrome. Shout out to my only children out there. I don't know, only child out there, whatever, you know. But if you've grown up as an only child, then you know that, like, life just, you just get to do life on your own, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you just get to, you just feel like you're your own biggest cheerleader, right? And so, which is actually is a good segue, because even going into, like, what we're talking about today around imposter syndrome, it's like you're your own biggest cheerleader, but your own mm-hmm. biggest critic, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're your own voice in your head. There really isn't... I mean, I'm grateful I had a big sister who, like, a lot of people still think is my biological, and now she almost came past from my biological, but had her with me. Yeah. But still, you know that you're an only child. And so that way you're your own biggest critique. So when others tell you that they're doing well,
right.
you're like, I'm not doing well, right? And if you had been a PK, for those who don't know PK, if you had been a pastor's kid to the mix, and add religion, and which religion ain't a bad thing, but when you add this expectation of the right. church community to being a PK and being a female PK, you know, and all of that, plus being an only child, all eyes on me, you know, when yeah. I'm entering the church, you know, and all of that. And so it just gets really hard, and you just, in your head, you're giving answers, you're giving solutions. So anyways, today, like I said, we're going to be talking about imposter syndrome. And fun fact is, Bhakti and I actually did a presentation
yes.
on this back in grad school,
yes.
like 2 years ago, if not more.
Our last semester, I think.
Yeah. So probably 2 years ago, like in 2021. And we did the presentation to, like, the International Student Life kind of, like, body. And, like, there, I think they had, like, presentations to be, like, specific
yeah.
times. And so I'm like, there's no better person to talk to this about, because we have had this conversation so many
yeah.
times. And I'm like, I need the world to hear Bate's wisdom so that my friend can blow. So that when my friend do bow, you know,
please.
So I'll be like, I'm the friend of the person that did bow.
Please.
You know,
like, on first name basis, we have nicknames, the whole world, okay? No, you're hyping me too much.
No, let me hype you, my friend, so that when you blow me, so that I can blow, you know. But, you know, like, let's talk about imposter syndrome. Like, what's your own definition? I mean, I can see what University of Google calls imposter syndrome, but
honestly, I think when I think about it, and even while you were talking, before I answer your question, you know, I'm like, I can sit down here and tell you, you know, great things about yourself. However, sitting and receiving that is hard. And I think some of that is a function of imposter syndrome. And I feel like I almost understand you, even though that was maybe like a 30-minute, you know, explanation of being an only child, being a pastor's child. That in itself like allows people to understand you better. Because as you're talking, I'm like, wow, those are unrealistic standards and expectations for anyone to expect you to live up to. I can say that to you, but if I was in the same shoes, I probably would not be thinking about it that way, and I would put in all that pressure on myself. And to me, that kind of translates to imposter syndrome a little bit. And in my experience, that is when you may be qualified, you may be doing the job well, and you're doing it, you know, in a way that's so exceptional and everyone else can see it, but inside you're like, I'm not doing great. I don't think I'm qualified to be here. I'm not the smartest person in the room. Why am I even here? Do I deserve a seat at the table? It's all those questions are going on in your mind, because the external and the internal don't match up. There's something, there's a disconnect. And you feel quite literally like an imposter. You feel like a fraud, like the person who has been dropped in a space that you should not be in. Like you are interrupting something. I feel like that's kind of the best way that I can describe it.
You know, I told you before we started recording that, like, I'm just going to be doing and because this topic is so needed. You know, and maybe I'm saying professional space, but to be honest, I think we might talk about so many other spaces that imposter syndrome does come up in. So it's literally being dropped in a place, and you're like, even if you're qualified and even if you're good, like you said, you still don't feel that, right? And talking from a personal perspective that I started in, like, even though y'all tell me like, hey, you're doing good, you're doing great, like you survived, you know, the check marks of all those things. I'm like, I don't think so, you know? And so how have you seen imposter syndrome play out? Like maybe in your life or just in other people? Or
how much time do you have?
I have some time.
Oh my God. We could talk about it for ages, but I know, and I want to be respectful just of time as well, because I think everything we talk about, even if we talk about it like in the professional space, it can translate to any space. You think of, you know, mothers who are saying, I'm not a good mother, and you're seeing them bend over backwards to ensure that their kids, their husbands, their families have everything they need. Everyone is happy and healthy, and they're still thinking, well, I'm not doing good enough. I don't feel qualified. I don't feel like I'm ready to be a mom, whatever that may be. Obviously, that is not my reality, because I'm not a mother or anywhere near being one. But I definitely have seen it in the classroom and in the workspace. And I know when we did our presentation at the University of Georgia, we were in that time, you know, getting close to graduation, applying for jobs. But I remember very distinctly one of the first interactions we had beyond orientation week was the first, so classes started like on a Wednesday, so we didn't really have a full week. The first Monday of the semester, it was during lunchtime.
I remember.
And our friends Linda and Akosia, I didn't even know those people that long. Like I met them maybe a week prior, 2 weeks prior during orientation. And it's lunchtime, and you know, everyone's like, oh, how'd the classes go? How are we all feeling? How are we doing? I just break down crying. And I think there was a moment of confusion, like, what is going on? We haven't even gotten to the hard part and you're already crying. And it was because I was looking for an assistantship. And so I don't know who I spoke to or if I just kind of took it upon myself. And I went to the dean and I said, hey, you know, I'm a new graduate student here. I don't have an assistantship. I was wondering, you know, if there was anything in the department that had opened up. You know, and she said, nothing that I have personally, but there's this professor who, you know, works with a team of people. He's always doing research. He travels to, you know, all these different countries. That might be something you might be interested in. Go talk to him. You know, and in my naivety, I strutted over to his office and I was like, hey, the dean asked me to come talk to you. what do you have for me? And he said, okay, what is your experience? And I was like, oh, I mean, I've done research.
As an
undergrad.
I'm a master's student.
Exactly.
I need no experience needed.
Exactly. It's my first full day. What else would you like me to tell you? He's like, you know, what have you done in the big papers? And I was like, well, I did a research. That's like the one big research I've done. I said big. It's not like it was published. I didn't even find any real results. It was more like a proposal. And he said, okay. So before he asked me that, the first question he said was, so what exactly are you going to be adding to my team? Hey, we guys know when you're in an interview and they say, what are your strengths? That's like the hardest question to answer.
Yeah.
And this man is looking me in the eyes and saying,
because it's a value question.
Right. What value do you bring? I was like, me, value myself. How do you mean? I'm here. Am I not? Do you not need human resources?
Oh my God.
And I had no idea.
He's I'm the gift. I'm the one. I'm what? I'm the table.
I am the table. Why are you asking me what I'm going to bring to the table, sir?
Oh my God.
I had never felt more stupid in my entire life. Mm. Even though in the long run, I'm sure there are things I could have added to that project. So he said, go back, send me a copy of this paper that you're talking about, right? Something that you've written, and send me exactly how you're going to be an asset to my team. Ha. I walked away just being like, well, it's assistantship I want. I not kill somebody. I don't know how to tell you how I'm going to be an asset to your team. I talked with my mom. I talked to different people. Everyone is trying to help me brainstorm. Spoiler alert, I never ended up working with him in that capacity.
No.
Couldn't quite figure out how I was going to be an asset to this team. And I think it came down to me not understanding my worth and not knowing how to articulate that.
Mm.
It's not that anyone who worked with him was, you know, far more advanced than I was. I'm sure there are people who were, maybe people who were already PhD students or were also professors. But I knew how, I'm sure that he probably could have taught me how to sort data, which I've done before. I know how to pull up articles. I know how to do a literature review. I knew how to do those things. But when he said, how are you going to be, you know, how are you going to be a valuable person on my team? My mind went blank and I was like, I'm not qualified for this.
Mm.
I went back to the class that we were having. I sat there and all of a sudden, listening to other people interact with the topic, you know, make contributions, I felt stupid. I was like, these people know what they're talking about. I don't understand half the acronyms.
Don't even get me started.
MLS.
Don't get me started on what? The whole acronym and social. Like, don't even get me started. Even though I hate the fact that I'm not one of those people,
Yes, it's an organizational issue, right? It's not just limited to social work. It's people who've been doing work.
True.
You know, research, whatever, for a long time. There are things that are just second nature to them, but they all started from somewhere.
Mm.
And for me, imposter syndrome is being stuck at the starting point.
Mm.
Forgetting that everybody else had a starting
point. Oh my God, they dropped mic very well. This time, let's just drop mic. I'm going to call the drop mic, after I've been dropping off the mic, this mic will just break. Okay, so I'll collect money for another mic from you.
Like, that's going to be my gift to you.
Yes, my dear.
And I think I'm having that realization now for the first time, is being stuck at that point that, and I can't, you know, not being able to get beyond that point of, wow, everyone started from somewhere.
Yep.
Everyone was once a new student. Everyone was once a new staff, new employee, whatever it might be.
Mm.
That in my life, that's the way that it has looked like. And I carried that experience with me through grad school, constantly feeling unqualified, even in spaces where I'm sure I knew what I was talking about. I'm sure I had something useful to say. And of course, don't get me wrong, it's also nice to be the person in the room who's not the most intelligent. In fact, I think that's something that, you know, other people inspire me in. My partner always says, like, I want to be the person in my circle of friends who's not necessarily the most successful.
Yep.
I want to be in the room with people who inspire me to want to do more.
Yep.
So sometimes that's a good thing, but when you've been selected or chosen, right?
Let's,
we all got admission to that program. We've been chosen to be in this program, and then I'm sitting there limiting myself, saying, wow,
I'm not qualified.
All these people have experience. I'm just straight out of undergrad.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. That was an achievement in itself, and I should have been proud of that.
Yeah.
You know, but it also keeps you humble. So. win is a win.
Yeah. A win is a win.
Win is a win.
A win is a win. Like, I'm like, I don't know if y'all can hear like drawers open and stuff, but I'm just like, I'm like, I want to be writing nuggets down. And I mean that, you know, because it's you constantly. I love how you said it's you feeling unqualified, even though you are qualified. And that's the hard thing about imposter syndrome. So I'm going to read what I got from our favorite space on Google. And it was talking about
the
like
university
of Google. You know, imposter syndrome is a condition of feeling anxious and not experiencing success internally, despite being high performing in external objective ways. Whoa, right? One of the few minutes when I'm like, okay, Google is actually good. Not when I feel like I have headache and I'm like, symptoms of headache and the day that your leg is about to remove, you know.
You have cancer.
You have cancer and I'm like, hey, it's just my legs, I'm pretty pure, you know. But this, I think the key word there for me is despite. So you could be high performing in very objective ways where like if there was to be a review, if there was to be a check mark, you can check. And like they'd be like, you're doing great, but you'd still feel anxious and you still feel like you're not doing well and you're still gonna feel like you're not being successful, right? And I feel like that's what a lot of people go through now. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm not qualified to be in this space. I'm not qualified to be a mom. I'm not qualified to be a wife. I'm not qualified to be a grad student. Like you were saying, I'm not qualified to be a research, which just to add, if just to speak for you, Batse, which you eventually did lecture, right? You didn't even just do research. You like lecture, right? It's like, I'm not qualified to do this, but it's interesting, right? And I, of course, you know, I'm always going to talk about faith. But the interesting thing is that God sees us. God qualifies the called. Mm-hmm. He doesn't call the qualified. So he doesn't care whether you're full qualified or not is what it means. It doesn't mean that God just chooses anyhow persons into positions. Mm-hmm. It means that he will call you qualified. So even if you are qualified and you don't feel it, stamp it on your on this part of your head, on your agbari, aka your forehead, of like qualified. So you will get a carry qualified. So even when you don't feel like it, you're gonna remember that I am the one who has made you qualified, right? Which is so important and which is so necessary, because I remember talking to one of our big uncles when like that week of, even though Batavia, like, you were not talking, I remember going to Octavia after one of our fellowship. Shout out Uncle Xavier, we love you. And
we love you.
I remember going to Xavier and I'm like, I sat him down and it was like probably my second week or third week at African Fellowship, and I'm like, Uncle Xavier, I'm gonna fail this thing, I promise you, I am not meant for this. Hey, I did GRE, we wrote exams, I'm sorry, we wrote like sample statements, we completed applications. If we did not complete those things, number one, we'll not even get into the school. Not because that was the only reason, of course, the mercy and the favor of God. But we forgot that we did all these things to be able to even get into that space. And then I tell myself of like, I cannot do this thing. When last have I read a book in this life? Me. Anyway, I probably just graduated like a year and a half ago. Yeah. But I'm like, I don't even used to read poster, because I've told myself that after bachelor's, I'm done. Yes.
Whenever you say a word, you close your
whenever
eyes.
I close my eyes both externally and internally. And I remember talking to him, I'm like, Octavia, I can't do this. Like, I am struggling. I remember our first assignment for Proceed. I struggled with that assignment. The lecturer had to give me like grace period. I went to her after class. I'm like, please help me. I cannot start the first word. Like, you again, going back to what you were saying, it's being stuck at that beginning stage. Yeah. I just needed to write that paper, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't for the life of me get it. Yo, in Nigeria, if you have a bachelor's, for most people, both of you, you have to do project. You have to do your project in your 400 level. And me, I did not pay for it. Me, I've never seen money to eat before. I'm not going to pay somebody to do project. I did my project myself. So God bless my project supervisor. I am the table, my dear. I did my project supervisor. I did all the trips to all the whole Lagos State agencies back then that, you know, practice social services. I totally forgot that piece. I forgot that even if I didn't do all of that, I had the ability to, I had the capacity to expand and to grow in that area and to write research paper, but I couldn't for the life of me start the first sentence in that assignment. It wasn't even a research paper. It was all this like subjective writing paper.
Yes.
And I couldn't write. I was so stuck in that stuff. And I remember like tearing up and like trying to write that paper that night. And she was like, Ola, I'm going to give you this one last deadline and you have to get this. And I just remember like, my mommy who sent me work.
It was all of us that were struggling,
you know, and like just being stuck in that. And of course I still had moments of imposter syndrome even after that, right? But sometimes it's being stuck in that starting point. Imagine if it wasn't a paper, imagine if it was something else that depended on me to do, and I didn't have anybody to give me a deadline and I was stuck in that beginning. Would I still be doing it, right? Are there things that like we've been stuck in, you know, and we're like, you know what, I'm not even gonna do it. Like I remember like episode 1, season 2, we're talking about it and I'm like, just start, you know, just start, just start it, even though you don't feel it, even though you don't feel like you got it. Remember the first time I held the mic, I'm like, hello one two, hello two ete,
testing one two,
you know. And I definitely still felt it when I was about to start season 2. That's why it took me like almost a year to get back on. Because I'm like, I don't think I'm doing this thing rightly. Right? Yeah. And so just to repeat everything you've said. That it's been in that unqualified stage. But how do you think, how has this played out in your workspace? I mean, we've gone through grad school where, you know, that's in back, it's in the past, old things are passed away and all things are becoming new, you know. How are you seeing that in the professional space for you regarding, because I have stories to tell for this one, but I'll let you know.
Me too. When you say all things have passed away, all things became new, I was just crying in a new setting. That's the change. When I started my job, I
love you, girl. I only changed the setting of my crying.
I changed the setting. I moved from Georgia to South Carolina to go and continue crying about being an imposter because
I love you.
Let me tell you, the workplace showed me shiggy. Not because the job is
shiggy bangsha,
but because my mindset, I was still very much like, I'm going into this job with a master's degree for the love of God. And I still feel like, no one taught me how to do this. All the internships I was doing, all the research papers that I was writing, the things I was learning in class. If every time I'm writing a blog post, I have a moment where I'm like, one day when I was in class, my professor said, so I clearly learned things. I carried things with me. But in my head, those things only translated to my personal life, not to the workspace.
Yeah.
Why would they have hired me if I did not make them feel like I knew something? Part of that was also because I think there were things that happened, you know, it was a mental place that I was in, but also there were things that other people did consciously or unconsciously. I would like to believe it was they didn't do that with malicious intent, right? But when someone would make a comment about my age and the fact that I was younger, I already was dealing with feeling like I didn't belong in that space. So I would be like, hey, God, all these people that have been here for 10 years, they know what they're doing. Well, of course they do. They've been there 10 years. If they didn't, that would actually be a problem.
Yeah.
If you've been here 10 years and I'm doing your job better than you, or you've had 8 years experience,
it's more than I have,
and I'm doing your job better than you, that's a problem.
True.
And quite frankly, the person that hired you should look into that employment again.
Martin, the sack person, I know they deal. You know, talking for pigeon. I know they deal.
But my point is, there was a reason why I felt like they were more advanced than I was, because they have the experience.
True.
They've had time to be trained.
True.
They've had time to get a little better adjusted, right, to policies, to higher ed. I've come from a world of nonprofits, and with my coworker, you know, she's had so much more experience than I have, not necessarily at the same school. She was hired a few months before I was, but, you know, when she would say things like, oh, like higher ed is such a different beast, because she also had a background in nonprofit, sometimes it would make me feel validated, like, okay, it's not just me that's confused about this policy and procedure thing. like, even someone who's had, you know, years of experience doing survivor advocacy work, yeah, or, you know, education or whatever her experience may have been, it still felt a little bit foreign to her being in a different setting, mm-hmm, that operated in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, so moments like that, I would remind myself that, okay, it's not just you. However, because I was already dealing with the internalization of you're not good enough to be in this role,
yeah,
things that should not even have offended me were just offending me.
Mm.
Someone will say something, I'm like, wow.
Rock of offense.
Did they not think? Right. Did they not think I deserve to be here?
Mm.
They might even be paying me a compliment and I'll be like, the way that that
tone,
young woman is sounding, mm, yes.
The intonation.
It must sound like the morning was really good. Yeah. You know, they said it and they look left instead of looking right. I was struggling. And I remember my first day of work.
Mm.
I woke up around 2 a.m. and I just had a panic attack. I was sobbing uncontrollably. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Why did I accept this job? How am I going to do this? Blah, blah, blah. I also was starting out part-time. So it wasn't even like that much pressure. This was a brand new job, by the way. A brand new position at this school. So they're building it as they went. So there were... In some ways, yes, that put more pressure and us to figure things out quickly. But in other ways, people had so much grace because they didn't expect us to have all the answers because it's new. The university is figuring it out as they're going. We too are figuring it out as well.
Team figure it out.
Exactly. You know, but I think I had expectations of myself. I had expectations of what my first big girl job would be like,
yeah,
where I would be. I would just be walking in with my power suit and heels, feeling like,
oh,
I could take on the world.
Strut it.
Ah, it was not happening like that, so it didn't happen like that. Sometimes I would just lock myself in my office like, hey, you have just one chance, you know. And then a student would leave my office and email me, thank you so much. You know, you're the most helpful person I've met. Like, I would have responses like that in the middle of breaking down. I would make mistakes. And it's not like anyone was yelling at me.
Yeah.
You know, my boss would call me and say, hey, you should have consulted with this person. Go ahead and do it now. And, you know, that's something that would be beneficial for this case. I would drop that call and I'll just be like, Batsy, they're going to fire you. How dare you forget to consult with this person?
Hey.
However, I'm not seeing the behind the scenes where maybe that person is also forgetting to do something,
yeah,
and the person I'm both reminding them,
yeah,
hey, you should go ahead and do this. So it's been a long journey. I mean, obviously, talking about it now, I'm in a better place.
Thank
I still have
God.
My days where I'm just like, ah, what am I doing? But something that I'm quickly learning is there is a reason that we've been placed where we've been placed.
Amen.
A human being is not going to open their eye and say, you know what? You are extremely ignorant. Let me hire you. No. They're not going to... my school, they're definitely not going to be spending their money like that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
All the grants.
So there's a reason. Right. There's a reason that I've been put in the place that I've been put in.
Yes, 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 yes.
And what you were saying earlier about God qualifies the called. The truth is, God will not put a passion or a project in your heart that he's not going to equip you to do.
Ah, another drops mic.
He will equip you,
yep,
whether that's resources in terms,
yeah,
of people, communities of people who are reminding you, like you, this conversation we're having, I'm like, we put in the work, the blood, sweat, and the tears,
yeah,
to get the experience and qualifications we needed to be doing the things we're doing,
yep,
now.
Yep.
So sometimes it's that reminder, and sometimes it's a reminder of someone just speaking life into you when you don't have the strength to speak life,
true,
into yourself. My sister is one of my biggest cheerleaders, and she always tells me, I feel like I believe in you more than you believe in yourself. And then one day she was like, you know what? Maybe it's good that it's that way, because you can't be proud.
I love
you cannot
Tima.
Be proud. You cannot say, oh, well, I got here on my own.
Yeah.
Because even when they're calling you and telling you, I've given you the admission, I've given you the job,
yeah,
you're still acting like it's not you that took your hand to go and apply for it.
Yeah.
Or write the paper or do the interview, right? So I have, you know, people in my life who remind me in those moments, my family, my partner, my friends, like just people who uplift me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thankful for that because I feel like I think we're all better at doing that. We do that so well for,
yeah,
our friends, but we don't have the same energy for ourselves. As if it's not Jesus Christ that still died for us.
Yeah.
He looked at it and said, wow, you're actually really cool. You have coconut hair that you've seen sometimes,
but
you're so cool, I'm gonna come and die for you.
Yeah.
And that's not something you can put a price
on.
So when you're having those days where you're like, what am I doing here? Just remember, and it's not easy, I don't remember this all the time, but I have those moments of like, why are you sitting in your car crying? Are you actually okay? Have you forgotten what your identity is?
Hey.
Those are the moments that humbled me the most, because I feel like it's such a slap in the face of, you know, the manufacturer, right? When the manufacturer has made this beautiful thing that they're so proud of because they know how much they've invested in it.
Yeah.
And then the product is like, okay, I know that you built me to be able to pick up trash, but I'm telling myself I'm not capable of picking up this trash.
Hey.
Is that not an insult to the person that manufactured?
Yes, it is.
Knowing that they tested, they did all the things, they imported all the parts, they hired all the people to put this thing together.
Yes, and
this thing is not saying, no, I have the capability, but I cannot do it. And so I have some moments, doesn't happen often, but I have those moments of like, what a slap in the face of the person that made me.
Hey.
To know that he's given me this purpose or this task or this project, and he has equipped me to do it, and I'm telling myself I cannot do it. What if he puts me in a family of parents who really wanted an education for me but could not afford to give me that education? And that's not what my reality is. My parents have sacrificed so much, you know, to make sure I had the education I have. And I've now gotten all this education, gotten all this experience, just to come and reach this job to say, I cannot do it. Okay. To your turn, so Israel.
See, I'm like, I don't even know where to piece everything you said together. I don't think there's a need for me to piece it. And
okay.
I honestly, it's not flattery. You're taking the words exactly out of my mouth. And I'm like, I'm glad people are hearing it from somebody else's voice other than myself. Because
we're on the same wavelength.
You talked about identity, like literally episode 2 was about identity, you know, and you talked about mindset. We would always struggle with imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
If our mindset doesn't change and if we don't find our identity in God. And that's where we get into this comparison trap, right? Where we now tend to start comparing ourselves with ourselves, which the Bible tells us that we are unwise when we do that, right? It's like, if I find my identity in God, like you were talking about, God made me. Not be me, make God. God made me. And so if he made me, he knows what he has made me for. He knows what he has given me capacity for. The scriptures tell us that God would never give us more than what we can handle. He would never put me in a position that he knows that I cannot do. He would never walk me through the path of grad school that he knows I will not be able to handle. Right. It might be like a pressure cooker and my steam would be fuming, but he would look at me and be like, hey, I'm going to open the pot when you're done. Right?
Yes.
Because he knows that I have the capacity to withstand that steam, even though this thing is doing, you know, like when you put this is a pressure cooker, this is a pressure cooker that I've been reacting in my house. I don't know if all of you are using a new type of pressure cooker.
It's taking a little bit.
Thank you.
It's shivering.
It's shaking out the top. So that means it's sustaining the pressure, right?
Right.
But at least that's what my own auntie told me then, that you have to wait for it to cool down and then you can open it. Because if you try to open it in the middle of that steam, some pressure cookers will not even open. Right?
Yeah.
God knows that he has made me enough to withstand that pressure. If not, I will just be a regular pot. That I can just cook rice and off when I want, take out when I want, reduce the heat when I want.
Yeah.
But as a pressure pot is made to withstand that pressure. And when you open it, you'll be like, okay, yes, what I've made you for, you're done. Good job.
Girl.
We are cook another beans. Right? Or cook another goat meat. Do you understand? And so you literally, to be honest, it's not flattery. You hit the right things. That it really has to do, it has to do with our mindset. It has to do with like, how do we see ourselves? If my identity is on myself, I will not ever see myself as qualified. If I'm qualifying myself based on my life, based on my current, right? Based on where I am in the moment, I would never see myself as qualified, because I'll look at other people. I'll look at where I think I want to be. I'll look at where I think I need those experiences. I'm like,
right?
I used to say my boss, my supervisor, who is more of a leader than a boss. Every time we're talking, I'll be like, you do this, you have hard conversations so well. And she'd be like, Ola, you were not here when I struggled with having hard conversations. And so now what she sees is like, I still struggle. I go and meet the boss to, you know, my role boss play. To go and role play. And I'm like, how did you do it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, talking about the professional setting for me, I don't even know where to start from. I don't know. Like you said, me, I didn't even leave my own within the same region. I carry my own from Georgia. I carry them to Pacific West. I'm going to cry the same cry. But the thing is, you think that if you're thinking that only if I change position, only if I'm no longer in grad school, only if I'm no longer doing this job, only if then I'll feel better. Let me be the carrier of not go so great news. You're not going to feel better until your mindset changes.
Right.
That you are called for that position and you are called for that space and you are made for that space, especially as a believer. If you're not a believer, I would encourage you to be a believer. But if you're not, I also still want to say that you have the experiences and you have the capacity needed to be where you currently are. And yes, it's going to be a place of growth. Yes, you're not probably as skilled as the other people there, but you're going to grow. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And you're going to, I was like, if I'm no longer...
It never stops.
It never stops. Like, if I'm not in this position anymore, I cannot be a therapist. I cannot do it.
Mm.
What was the end? I cannot be a leader. I cannot be a supervisor. Yeah. I'm not made for this. Right? So now if I'm like, I need to be a different... I need to go to a different program. It would be, I cannot until I change my mindset. Until... Yeah. Every time I go into that, I'm telling myself that, like, no, even though it doesn't feel right now, I am still made for this position. I am still made for where I want to be, and I'm made to grow, you know. Things will never change. I'll just be carrying the crying to a different setting. I'll be transferring my tears to a different place. I'll be transferring, you know. And I think, which, you know, probably we might spend a little bit more time, is the impact of being a person of color in immigration and imposter syndrome.
I know.
I always say it. No way, I'll give you time to think about it. I always say it every time, most of the times I have, you know, amazing people, supervisors and leaders at my workplace, and I always tell them, I'm like, I know that because I'm a person of color and I'm an immigrant, I have an extra burden. It's not that you placed it on me, that
Basically.
Life, society, and I, myself, that I place on myself to do better. So when all my coworkers are performing at 99, I have to break the scale and perform at 120 because I have to do extra, because I have to do more, because I have to prove to you all that because I'm a person of color and immigrant doesn't mean that I cannot do what I gotta do. Because I'm Nigerian and I have a different accent doesn't mean I cannot do what I need to do. So it's not it's not that they're putting that pressure on me. It's what I have put on myself to show up and show up more and more. And so as people of color, especially living in the US, I don't think I would have felt that if I was back home in Nigeria, because I'm not an immigrant in my country and I'm not the person of color in a nation of color, right? And so I don't think I would ever have put that pressure on myself back home.
Right.
But the moment I cross the border and I'm not in my home country and I'm not in my homeland, those things will automatically come in, because I'm like, I don't want them to sack me. What will I do? You understand? And so I cannot give them the space to sack me. I cannot give them the place for them to be like, I need to do better.
Right.
So I have to do more. I have to go above and beyond, which itself is additional pressure. So when you are literally, again, objective ways, right? Even when they're like, have you done this check? I did for the month. I have these things I'm supposed to do, and I'm doing it. I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do for my job. I'm doing the groups. I'm doing the prep. I'm doing the scorecard. I'm doing all the things for my job. Mm-hmm. Check, check, check. And the end of the day, I'm talking to my supervisor, and I'm like, I'm not doing the right thing. I'm struggling.
And they're like, where
I was like, Kemi, and I'm like, you know, I'm not doing
show
this
me the
right
gap.
I should have written 2.5, but I wrote 2.2.
yeah,
you know. And so I don't know if This is a funny question. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Oh, you know, I have.
As a fellow Nigerian immigrant and person of color, but, you know, just to ask, I don't know if you've experienced that.
I have. And I think there are also factors, right? I think it would be inaccurate to come here and say all of that comes from an internal place, because like you said, there's society. There are things that are subconscious. Mm-hmm. When you're negotiating your salary and you're being reminded that, like, well, these people are also potentially going to sponsor your visa.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, you're literally thinking about the economic value that they place in you.
Mm.
Because you have to prove above and beyond, right? That's the way that the immigration system is set up.
Mm.
Why would we hire you over one of our nationals?
Yep. Yeah. Where we don't have to sponsor visa for.
Right. And you sometimes you're like, please show me the nationals. I also want this job. Who am I competing with? Exactly. Some positions are so competitive and that's a valid argument. And there's some that aren't.
Mm.
And you know, coming in, you're like,
yeah.
It's not always about qualification, right? Sometimes two people may have the same qualification and you have to find that thing that differentiates them.
Yeah.
And the fact that I'm a person of color or I'm an immigrant should not be the thing that disqualifies
me. Mm.
Look at things like our experience.
Mm.
I can understand certain things about international students in a way that somebody who is from here cannot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a shared experience. There is that, mm. you know, foundational piece that they look at me and they're like, you understand what I'm talking about. And they have not even said that much.
Mm.
Whereas somebody else who may be even more qualified than mm-hmm. me, you know, when it comes to just like expertise in the job,
yeah,
may be completely clueless. And they're like, can you explain a little bit more what you mean by X, Y, Z?
Mm.
Or they're working with you to find solutions and you're not taking into account that when they say, just tell your parents you do not like what, you know, they said to you. Or tell them you do not like how they forced you to do X, Y, Z.
It's good, it's slap.
That in some cultures, that's not really the way it's going to go. So creatively, how are we working together to make that conversation look a little bit...
culturally appropriate.
Be a little bit more tailored, exactly, to your culture than just, mommy, I didn't like what you said. Daddy, I didn't like what you said. So these are things that you think about and you know it's in the back of your head, but when you're in that process where you're put side by side by someone who's not an immigrant, not a person of color, sometimes you forget it. And it goes back to your worth and your value as a person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to share too much. I want to be discreet, just, you know, about out of respect for the work that I do. But there have been things that have happened and there have been instances or things that I've found out that have made me question, you know, my value or the way that I am valued by other people at the job that I do. Like, you know, you start to question, did this happen because I'm international, you know, because I'm not are they taking into consideration the fact that, we're sponsoring your visa, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
And whether we like it or not, that puts a different kind of pressure on you, because our existence in this country, that we're on borrowed time.
Pencil.
Until you become a citizen.
Pencil.
You are on borrowed time.
Your name is in pencil. That's what I say.
Right. They will just clean it when they want to clean it and hire someone that's not going to be making them talk to lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about all those things, automatically you're like, okay, I have to do more. I have to go above and beyond. There are times where I've actually made mistakes. And I haven't just cried because I'm not a strong person who does not, cannot acknowledge that, oh, everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah.
I've cried because I'm like, oh God, have they taken this thing that I have done, mm-hmm. not just as, oh, she's still learning, that's why she missed this thing.
Yeah.
Have they taken that, you know, and thought, oh, we knew we shouldn't have hired her because how will a Nigerian know how to do this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that added layer. And sometimes maybe nobody's thinking about that. But, you know, there's that internalized pressure, fear that you already have. And I'm like, while, yes, the Lord is the one sustaining me here, he's the one opening and closing doors. There are also physical human beings signing the papers.
Amen.
That say, yes, we will hire.
Yeah.
Yes, we will sponsor.
Yeah.
Yes, we will keep you. Yes, we'll increase. Whatever that might be. And so I've seen that play out, you know, and you're like, well, I don't want to say this, I don't think it's because XYZ. Yeah. I don't want to complain about this. I'm not going to be seen as the angry black woman or the ungrateful immigrant.
Hey, that one. That one. I'm in that zone.
Like,
I'm in that zone right now, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm
it's an exchange.
Yeah.
I'm bringing something to you. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I remember we had these conversations when we were applying for our jobs, you know, of like, hey, God, how am I going to, who is going to hire me over, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, these people have put this job position out because they need services. They're not doing me a favor by hiring me. It's a transaction.
Yep.
I give you services, you pay me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like I'm just coming and sitting on the chair. And
I bring my whole self to the table. Sorry.
Exactly.
Another instance of I'm the table. I show up. You're using all of my... not using. Using is not the word. I am bringing and using all the... I am using all the experiences and skills that I have. I'm packaging that. Yes. I'm bringing that to you as a skill that will help you.
Right.
So there's any things that I know, like you were rightly saying, that like... it's just because of my... and there's some things that my, like, so it's like my, you know, non-POC co-workers are saying, and I'm like, what's that? And even, like, sometimes, like, I have, like, you know, non-POC clients, and they're talking about, like, and I'm like, what's... and they're like... it's only the baby, the younger ones, they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, sorry, I'm not even like, oh my God, Ola, what do you know? And I'm like, sorry.
But it's inevitable, right? Because you're thinking, forget race, right? Someone who's from a different generation may be thinking, I'm not going to understand the slang or the lingo that this generation is going to bring to
me.
So why do we now have to carry on our own heads, you know, our race, our ethnicity, our nationality, like it is the do or die? Sometimes we don't choose to. Sometimes it's how society
that's what I'm
has
saying.
Made it look like it's the biggest function.
I was telling someone recently, and I'm like... I think, and I could be wrong, and I stand corrected. I think I have the right to always see things from a lens of race and immigration and culture because it's constantly in my face and it's constantly being put to me. And I'm not just saying just professional in the society that I am different. And so when you do something to me and I see it from that lens of being different, that could either be a positive or a negative, which is always going to be a positive for me. I'm proud to be Nigerian. I'm proud to be melanin popping, right? As everyone should be proud if you're non-melanin popping. That is totally okay. You know, but I'm like, it's totally okay for me to see that. So sometimes they're like, well, it's not really about race. And I'm like, well, I have every right to think it might be about race, though, because that lens is being projected to me every single time that my race is different, you know. And so it's really hard because you go into these workspaces and you're like, I want to say something, but I'm not going to want to say it because I'm not going to want you people to think that I'm this because... when I have a high tone, it's shouting. But when I have a high tone in my culture, the gist is just getting started.
Yes, it's passionate.
It's passionate. It's what we call expressive. So I'm like, oh no, expressive. I'm like, expressive is the way of life. To be using your hands like Lasma and to be talking and to be just listening with your high tone and low tone and all of that. That's what shows that, like, you know, you are invested. If you have
you're
flat
there,
affect
right.
and you're smiling, you're like, so we were talking about the bus driver that did not want to give me my change yesterday. And I'm talking in this posture. My family members will just ease and go inside and like, this one is not okay.
Like, this is not important.
You know,
right now it's looking like it did not pay.
But when I come and I clap and I'm like, big sis, come and hear something. Number one, my sisters are like, do you understand what I'm saying? And so there's that cultural difference and there's the, you know, that cultural piece, but I have value, and it goes back to, like, I know you mentioned something about value, and I held that word. It's like the value that they want to place on me, because yes, these people put out posts about jobs, but I could talk about 20 something places that rejected me when I applied, because the moment I said I was an international student, they're like, oh, we're sorry, we don't, you know, we don't accept international students. So when I get into a job, it's normal for me to be like, ah, my immigration or my status as an international
Right.
I have to be careful because I have experienced rejection that way. Does that make sense? You know,
based on that factor. Yeah.
But my value is not in my job. My value is not in where I work. My value is in Jesus. Mm-hmm. My value and my identity is in Jesus. And so, even in this workspaces, I was still, you know, I'm learning of like, I'm still going to speak up. I will still be professional and I will still speak up, you know, and I will still support because that's what I'm supposed to do, you know, and that's my job. So, and even in other spaces where it isn't my job, you know, where it's like I'm interacting with people who might share the same similar experiences and I don't have anyone to speak up for them. I got you, you know? And so God help us, honestly. God help us. It's an ending conversation, but I think like as we wrap up, because I have taken so much of your Saturday early afternoon morning for me.
We could sit here and talk for the next 3 hours.
I'm trying to help people because if you leave it up to Bastia and I mean like we literally had a 1 hour 30 minutes conversation before this and this is going on to an hour. so that shows you that like, you know, we can definitely, you know, talk and seeing how Batsy and I met and kind of seeing where we are, I think that's a good thing about like having my friends and people that I know as like guests, because there's that it makes the conversation more personal. It makes it more human, you know. It's not it's shout out to people who like, I mean, it's okay to have things that you have orders and all of that, but I'm in that season and I'm enjoying that season for this podcast where it's just so personal. Where it's just so down to earth.
I love seeing it.
Thank you, baby.
I love seeing it. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. My friend is proud of me. So better come and be. I want to open my door in the next 24 hours, and I should not be able to walk.
Like, bring all my flowers.
All the flowers, uproot them, you know, and drop them right at my door. But if there's anything you say to people, just like regarding imposter syndrome, or to anyone who's like. Facing imposter syndrome, like we talked about, it's a mindset, you know, it's not a one-off thing. You don't just change position and you never have imposter syndrome, or graduate school and you never have imposter syndrome. If the mindset doesn't change that I am qualified for where I am and that God is with me and my value is in God, not in myself, and my identity is in God, not in myself, you know, we're never going to grow out of imposter syndrome. We're always going to be trying to pursue something that we will never attain. And what happens then is that we fall into the trap of like attaining where we now then miss God because we're trying to meet an expectation that God has not even set for us. But because we're like, I have to do this because everybody's doing it, we just fall into that trap. And before we know it, we're so deep in the hole with nowhere to go. So if you could say something to people, that's where I was going. If you can see, I mean, I've said my own, so over to you. You heard what I said, so if you can say something, what would you say?
Honestly, I'm gonna start with a scripture. It's 2 Corinthians 10 verse 5, and it says we destroy every proud obstacle that keeps people from knowing God.
Amen.
But I really want to focus on the part B that says we capture their rebellious thoughts and teach them to obey Christ. And I know a lot about rebellious thoughts because I struggle with my thoughts. The last couple of weeks I've been in this space where my thoughts scare me because I think about one thing and it spirals quickly. I overthink and I analyze and I break down. And I mean, we talked about mindset. That's where imposter syndrome comes out. It's something within me. And I'm not going to sit here and shame anybody for feeling like an imposter because I've been there. And we're working in that reality.
Yep.
It's something that is a work in progress. But my encouragement to you, and obviously to myself,
to me too,
when the thoughts come, and to you too, when the thoughts come, it is our duty because of what we know about who we are and why we have been placed in the places that we are to speak truth back into ourselves, or to call somebody that can speak truth into us, or to pray about it and ask God, remind me of my why, remind me of my who am I, who do I belong to, and what have you put inside of me that you want me to share with the world. That's going to be it. When you find yourself in that space, it's your responsibility to capture, hold yourself like, oh, I've noticed that I'm feeling this way. What am I going to do about it? If you need to do something practical, whether it means that you're in a room of people who you feel are more qualified than you. And there is, let's say, a course that you can take to get a certification that will allow you to feel a little bit more equipped. Go ahead and do that. I'm not saying that once you feel unqualified, there are not things you can do to better yourself, because that's not what it has been for me. I've had to learn. I've had to ask questions. And I think what I'm taking away from this conversation has just encouraged me is stop taking the backseat. I've taken the backseat for so long because of my fear and my conviction that I'm not supposed to be in the spaces that I'm in. So, you know,
take the front seat. Start.
Hear it and hear it loud, you know. And God never asked us to do anything in our own strength. And I think when we are saying, I cannot do it. Yeah, you cannot do it, because you were never supposed to do it by yourself. You're supposed to lean on God for that. So that's my encouragement.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you so much, Bate. Thank you. I was like, this conversation, 40 minutes.
Youssef, 40 minutes.
40 minutes for who? You've been where? With who? How? You know. I'm so grateful to have you, and I'm sure everyone listening would be so grateful as well. You know, PGC is definitely a podcast that, like, you can listen doing anything. You can listen while driving. Yeah. You can listen with your full attention. But there's always something for you. Because if I'm the only one who gets blessed just to be selfish, then I will take it. You know. But
one person is more one than person. Enough. I'm definitely I'm a driving and listening person. I have commutes. So I listen to podcasts as I'm driving. I mean, this conversation has blessed me and has reminded me of things that I've forgotten. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Creating this space for us to chat about this. Hopefully someone out there feels seen, heard, and uplifted.
And like, if you want to, like, you know, kind of like connect more with Batsy, or just like have questions or something that she said or an experience that she has, and you're like, I kind of want to do that, like, you know, just feel free to like reach out to us so we can kind of ask her permission and connect you. But we're so grateful to have you, Batsy, and thank you everyone for listening to our chat, this is how we talk, like, on the regular. This is us, you know.
Honestly, so, you're the third wheel. Part of the conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Like, having this, you know, we passed mic from inside the room, passed it outside so that you can be listening. We're grateful to have you listen. Please share if there's someone that you're like, I think this is not really just for me. I think I have someone who might benefit. Please share it with them. And, you know, like, catch up on all PGC episodes. And thank you, as always, for listening. And you know how we do it. I'll see you on the next episode, everyone. Bye.